Welcome to the French Connections Tuesday night edition. Of course, my name is Daryl Bradford Smith, and our date today is the 5th of May 2009. It's great to be here with you for this most important broadcast. Again, we are starting a little bit late because there was a preempted, pre-determined program that was going over live, and So we're starting about 7 or 8 minutes late, and we've got a lot of ground to cover today. A lot of things happening in the world. We have two guests coming up, one at the second break, and the other at the top of the next hour, talking about health issues. Now, many of you people in this audience have been watching your news and trying to make sense out of what they're talking about with this swine flu or this what they want to call it now is an A-type flu, or some call it the Mexican flu. It's a lot of hype at this point in time. Very little facts are surrounding the broadcast on television. Few people have died from it. I dare say the people that died from it were probably weakened to begin with and were already fragile from other problems. Last I understood, there were 19 deaths. Now, let's take a look at what's happened with that for a moment here. 19 deaths. If you gauge the world's death rate from climbing ladders on a day, you'd probably get more than 19 deaths from people falling off of ladders. So why would they turn around and close up airports and return aircraft and shut down cities and get a complete and general panic started? Well, just for that very reason, ladies and gentlemen, they've been injecting great sums of money into a program worldwide. It's in France, it's in Germany, it's in Argentina, it's in Brazil, it's in the United States, Canada, Australia, Japan, everywhere, spending a lot of money on new systems of quarantine and new systems of martial law, even, in the event, they say, of a pandemic outbreak. Well, interesting that this pandemic outbreak is being predicted like the 1918 outbreak, they're saying. But what everybody seems to forget is that the 1918 outbreak happened to military personnel. Many of them were very sickly to start with. Many of them had been shut in during trips across the Atlantic Ocean returning from the First World War. While they were in Northern Europe, they had been outside of the sunlight for many weeks and months, and their immune systems were extremely delicate and problematic. And then they came in contact with a pathogen. And many people believe the pathogen that they came in contact with was developed and designed in a laboratory. There is a great deal of evidence that proves this. So why would they keep pointing to an event that it would not be parallel today? Well, because there are going to do things along with this flu pandemic that they're engineering for us that take away our civil liberties. And they're going to stop you from moving around freely. They're going to stop you from traveling at airports. They're going to stop you from moving around in society to go buy groceries and things of this nature. All on the fear of becoming ill. And of course, if you're watching your television sets, people are sitting at home scared to death. And rightly so. People are told that you're going to die, you're going to die. And you keep seeing images of people walking around with masks on their face, and they keep running the same clips over and over again. People died, people died, people died. And what they don't do for you is put it in perspective. Now, that does not mean that when September, October, November comes around, this next year's flu season, that we will not be visited by a terrible outbreak. And there are many people who believe that this latest virus that has been circulating in Mexico City could have somehow been engineered in a laboratory because it has some rather unique characteristics to its genetics. I'm not entirely sure that's true. Some of the ways they've been identifying the genetic structure of this disease are certainly not the best science, the best method of proving that. We'll talk a little bit about that with one of my guests. how these three different viral entities within the so-called swine flu are actually getting in there. So, important stuff. Other stuff that's happening. Financial markets are continuing to drop. More problems with things. Banks, they did a, what they call a stress test on the banks in the United States, and found out that most of the largest banks in the United States, a majority of them, and I think they tested 19 banks, six passed their stress test and the rest did not. That was the figure I got when I read the article last, so it might be a different number today. But that the stress test means, are they solvent? Can they function as a lending institution? And the fact of the matter is the majority cannot. And so, basically, they're calling on the United States government to inject even more money, and they've already injected 12 plus trillion. Now, the American gross domestic product for a year is 13 trillion and change. 13 trillion, 13.5 trillion. Now, that's an incredible amount of money. That's just beyond anybody's imaginings of how much it is. If you stack the dollar bills on top of each other, you could go to the moon and back several times. That's how much money it is. And that's the deficit they're running this year, in addition to their normal bills they have to pay. Now, how much they've printed and injected. When you add that to the already standing financial money supply of the United States dollar alone, you should have seen already a 50% drop in the value of the dollar, but you did not. Now, were you a country like South Africa or a country like let's say Libya or even China or any other country in the world printing your entire GDP for a year and injecting it into your society's financial system, you would have seen a massive depreciation of your money. But there is a concerted effort in the world to prop up the dollar. And it's not just from the American side of things. The Chinese do not want the dollar to fall precipitously because they hold so much of the American debt, $1.6 trillion worth of the debt of the United States. So they don't want the world's financial system to go into tailspin. They want to sell to the public that everything is going to get better very soon. The fact is, ladies and gentlemen, it's not. The financial system is worse today than it was yesterday and worse this week than it was last. So what we're heading for is a problem in commercial real estate, a problem in the bond market. Cities and counties and states in the United States are bankrupt. Countries like France are reporting the highest jumps in unemployment in their recording history. The GDP and growth rate of Germany, for the first time since the Second World War, is actually negative 6%. They're shrinking in their economy, and probably only half of that number is being reported. So I would say it's more like 10, 11, maybe even 12% shrinkage in some of these economies. What's my point? My point is that they're trying to buy more time to put in place the kinds of controls they want to put in place to so that they do not lose control, ladies and gentlemen, because the story about the things we've discussed on the French Connection so many times with the listeners are getting out. They're getting into circulation. People are paying attention. Tens of thousands of people per week are downloading the files from my site and learning about these crimes that have been committed against their publics. And I'm not alone in the fight. There are many, many people on the internet and in newspaper print and flyers, talking to colleagues at work that are discussing these facts. So they are, in fact, losing control in many ways. And what they need to do is actually come up with a better plan than they've presently got. Now, one of the plans they've got, again, is this flu virus, I think, and the using of it as a means of locking things down. So what I decided to do tonight, later on in the show, and this is what we're going to be talking about later, is how to prepare for this virus if it does eventually come, and how you can save yourself your health. And these are absolutely proven methods, so we'll talk about them when we come back after this break from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
The recent intense air bombardment on Gaza has left scores of people killed and hundreds.
Okay, Daryl, I'm on break.
You're on a break, yeah. Well, for how long? And ladies and gentlemen, we're back. What I wanted to do tonight, and first of all, of course, my website details, if you are an internet surfer, is IamTheWitness.com. And I got a recommendation for everybody out there. If they want a little more information than just my site, they can go to the Information Underground, which is a forum and news site. Somebody I know, known for a long time, runs that site, and there's a lot of great information over there as well. We've got stuff happening here, ladies and gentlemen. You know, candidates in France. This is an interesting bit of news for the South African audience, and maybe you can take a page out of this man's book. A man named Diodate is a French comedian, somebody who is well known in the French circles, in the comic circles, and he has come out against Zionism, and they actually charged him in a courtroom for being anti-Semitic, and he went up against the court and said, look, you know, me talking about these criminals in the way that I am is, should not be illegal, but they charged him anyway. So he decided to start a new political party called the Anti-Zionist Party of France. So it's called the Parti Anti-Sioniste in France here. And now the French government is going to make it illegal to have this party. Now, it doesn't seem very free and democratic to not be able to have a party, and certainly to talk about Zionism is not anti-Semitic. Zionism is a political movement, ladies and gentlemen. How could talking about a political movement be anti-Semitic? And you know, as we've talked about on this South African broadcast, I am not against Jews that are not involved in this crime gang and that are not working on behalf of World Zionism. World Zionism is a virulent form of the religion of Judaism, and it is a racist and usurping type of religion that has no regard for the life and value of life in other people's environments. Take a look at our history with Palestine, and in fact the intrigues around the world of governments being usurped and controlled through Zionist money and influence. The United States is the best example I can come up with the use of AIPAC and the B'nai B'rith using their influence to stifle and stymie people's ability to speak freely and honestly about facts in their lives. And South Africa has the same situation. Of course, I was attacked by the South African Board of Jewish Board of Deputies, which is an avowed and admitted Zionist organization. So why they would do that? Well, because they do not want their activities exposed. They simply don't. You know, this is like talking about the mafia. They don't want their activities talked about. And when you do that, you run the risk of being, being attacked by them in any way that they have to do it. And that could go from all the way from physical to legal to threats of any type or every type. So, but it's getting harder for them to sell the idea that talking about the crimes of Israel and its use of excessive force in Palestine and the theft of the land and their starvation of the public and all of these things, and say that it's not a racist doctrine. It's getting more and more difficult for them to push aside the accusations that they are running the American government from behind the scenes when you take a look at the facts, or Hollywood when you take a look at the facts, or the drug trade out of South America and Afghanistan. When you look at who's the people profiting from it and who's laundering the money from it, and when 7 out of 10 billionaires in the world are Jewish, but they're less than 0.01% of the world's population, but they're 7 out of 10 billionaires, you've got to scratch your head and ask yourself why. And so when these questions are asked, they charge you with anti-Semitism. They say that's what you know you're really being. No, I'm not being anti-Semitic at all. I'm being an honest researcher who is exposing criminal behavior, and it's as simple as that. And so I defend the work I've done, and I will debate these facts with anybody from the South African Jewish Board of Deputies, anytime, any place, anywhere. So that's a standing offer for them to debate me on the facts that we can bring out. I doubt they will take it, although I hope they would. I hope they would come on this broadcast with me and discuss these facts openly. But you know what? They would be more exposed than they already are if they were to do that. So, no surprises there. And, you know, doing this work has its rewards. One of the rewards is that I know my family and the generations that follow me and are going to be freer if we are successful in informing the world about this. I know that my grandchildren and their children will be better off, will have more choices in life, will be able to make decisions that best suit their lives and not have them dictated by a small group of criminals running things. And, you know, the other thing that I'd like to talk about here, too, is that one of the benefits, side benefits that I get, Daryl Bradford Smith gets from doing this work, is that I make associations from cultures and from places that aren't normally familiar to me. And I see that as a gift. I see being able to learn about other people and learn about other people's interests and cultures and food choices and travel choices and all of these things and how their families are raised and what it is they believe. These are the richest parts of the human story. And I love sharing those stories with them. So this is another benefit that I get from doing these broadcasts. And it's because of people like the listeners today from Europe and from Africa and from South America and America that brings me the most joy of doing this work. It's a hard slog. No money in it. I don't get paid for it. And it's difficult to keep myself afloat here as everybody is having more and more difficulty doing that. So, but it's still very rewarding. You know, I've been putting news items on my site, on my website for a long time, and one that I'd like to bring up today is a story about the state of Montana. Many of you have heard the word Montana, and maybe many of you also know that it is a state in the United States. It is in the western, northwestern part of the United States, next to Idaho. The governor of that state just passed a law saying that the citizens of the state of Montana have the right to own any gun of any type without registration or without having to tell anybody that they own it. That a gun right, the right to own a gun, is written into the Constitution and it will not be denied. And, of course, the federal government wants to take the guns out of the hands of the American public so that the only people with guns will be the government. And you know what that means. That means tyranny. And in every instance I can look back on in history, when the only group of people in a society that have guns is the government, you've got a tyrannical government in every instance. So Montana is setting the bar very high. They've drawn a line in the sand. They said, we're not going to go along with the nonsense that's outside the constitutional construct of the United States, and we are not going to turn in our guns. So it's very heartening that people are beginning to take positions based upon the United States Constitution. Other states will follow. New Hampshire's talking about it. Idaho itself is talking about it. Three other states. Texas is talking about secession from the federal government if they don't start repairing the problems they've created. So lots of things are happening. I don't know where it'll all end. You know, part of the fear that I have, but along with that, the hope that I have, is not knowing just how this is all going to suss itself out. I mean, look, guys, you know, we're in a battle, and this is a very wily and very aggressive and even violent group we face. They are willing to take any type of measure they need to take in order to quash these efforts that we're all making. But I think the flow of history has gone against them. I think the way this is spreading around the globe and the attempts people are making to stop that spread are only helping it spread. You know, it's interesting when you tell somebody not to look at something, and that they're not allowed to see something, the first thing they want to do is see it. It's a basic human condition of curiosity that happens. And so as they try to blind the world's public from the crimes and activities of this gang, and they try to push you away from certain information, people are starting to say, I wonder why they would push me away from that information. I wonder why they would try to stop me from learning about this. You know, they're asking the right questions. Now, that doesn't mean we're a majority. In fact, we're not anywhere near anything like a majority. In fact, we're probably in the single digits, 1, 2, 3% worldwide that is fully aware of these crimes. But I believe there's another 10 or 15% who are well on their way to becoming informed. And when you do a 15% calculation of the world's population, that is a huge number of informed people. South Africa, of course, is becoming very well informed about these issues because of people like Inayat Wadi and many other diehard patriots, people who are proud of their nation and proud of proud to be truth tellers. And the same thing holds true in the United States with the internet's use. And sad fact is that not enough people in South Africa are using the internet to its fullest advantage. And as a result of that, some of the things that are presented on my website cannot be accessed by many people. But we can't have everything. The technology hasn't reached that far yet. And one of the things that I wanted to bring up also is that let me read this for you here. It says, Mr. Obama, you've probably heard this before, but Barack Obama has been charged in 48 separate legal cases with not being eligible to be president because he is not an American-born citizen. He was naturalized after the fact, and his birth certificate would prove that he was born actually in Kenya, and that would not make him a less of a human being, but it's certainly by constitutional regulation in the United States ineligible to be the president of the United States. Now, the fact of the matter is that judges in the United States are blocking the access to his birth certificate. Now, again, once you start blocking somebody's access to some information, the first thing everybody wants to know is, why are they trying to block? What are they hiding? Well, what they're hiding, obviously, is that the truth is being disguised. And this man, in fact, doesn't have a right to be president. And when you take a look at his administration, it is all Zionists. In every department, on every stoop and step of his administration, sits a very powerful Zionist group or person running the show, and that is without exception. These same people hold sway in the judiciary, they hold sway in state politics and Washington, D.C. So they are able, with their power, to block any investigations into Mr. Obama's eligibility to be president. And amazing that there isn't a hue and cry against this kind of obfuscating, but there isn't. It shocks me every time I read something new that the American people can be so abused and do so little to stop it. But again, we are moving in the right direction, and I believe because people's financial security is being eroded at such a rate that the best way to get people on board with these facts is to take away their financial security. I mean, if you don't have money to pay your bills and to support your family correctly, you're going to want to know what's happening and why. And the what and the why is found on the net. It's found in reading books by Nestor Webster or Archibald Moll Ramsey, or by Israel Shahak wrote a great book on it. Elizabeth Dillings, Myron Fagan has things. Major General Smedley Butler, William Dudley Pelley, Walter White. So many people have written so many powerful things about this crime gang that you can read, even if you do not have internet. You know, your local library may not have all the books I just mentioned, but certainly one or two of them may be sitting on the shelves, and you would have access to them. And so if you go to the website, IamTheWitness.com, you'll find a whole host of books that you can download free of charge. No money. You don't have to buy them. Although I wish you would send a donation in to keep me keep my programming on the air. But if you can't donate, it doesn't matter. The books are available to you, and all you need to do is download them. So, yeah. Anyway, what we're going to be talking about tonight as well is a vitamin. Well, it's not quite a vitamin, ladies and gentlemen. It is a hormone that they call vitamin D. And it's a remarkable substance. And what you're going to find out tonight is that it's essential for health, period. End of story. If you have low levels of vitamin D, you are unhealthy. If you have extremely low levels of vitamin D, you are on the verge of dying. And the only places you can get vitamin D are from sunshine, from a supplement that comes in the form of a hormone, or from eating certain types of fish oil or green leafy vegetables. But that method is very difficult to raise your blood level because it's such small amounts of vitamin D. The sun is the best place to get it. Now, does that not fly in the face of what everyone's been telling you? Stay out of the sun, you're going to get skin cancer, blah, blah, blah. If you go out in the sun, you need to put sunscreen on. Well, the fact of the matter is, if you put sunscreen on, SPF 15, you absorb absolutely no vitamin D from your skin, and you are running a risk of illness. Now, in the United States, most northern cities like Boston and Baltimore and New York and Detroit, the people are in the 60 to 70% of the population in the wintertime are deficient in vitamin D, causing all kinds of disease. So what I decided to talk about, and by the way, what you don't know, that there's an addendum to that statement, it also stops you from getting flu and colds. Yes, let me say that again. The flu, all flus and colds. So it's important information if you have been worrying about this swine flu outbreak. So what we're going to do is we're going to plumb the depths of this subject with two doctors. The first doctor coming up has been on CII before with me, Harvard-educated medical doctor, 3+ decades in practice in the United States. She's an African-American woman. Her name is Dr. Nancy T. Banks, and she is a remarkable human being, brilliant in every way. And she's going to talk a little bit about staying healthy, and then she's going to be on along with Dr. Michael Hollick. And Michael Hollick is a researcher from Boston who is also a medical doctor working out of Mass General Hospital, I believe. No, the Boston University Medical Center. So he's a researcher on vitamin D and its effects when you are deficient in it and its benefits when you have enough of it. So we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after these messages with my first guest, Dr. Nancy T.
You're listening to The French Connection on CII.
We're back, ladies and gentlemen. It's a pleasure and an honor to have my guest that I'm bringing on right now. Her name is Nancy T. Banks. She is a physician of several decades in the United States. I think 3.5 decades of time she spent treating people in the United States. Gynecologist and obstetrics specialization. But she, in the last few years, she has turned her attention to issues that she believes are important to the health of the general public, as well as of interest to herself, and she has brought to bear a great deal of experience and a lot of effort to expose a lot of facts about health, about disease, and about how we can avoid it and what the truth is about these conditions. Her name is Nancy T. Banks, and I'm going to bring her up right now. Nancy, are you with me?
Yes, Daryl. How are you? you?
I'm doing very well, Nancy. I'm so happy that you're here with me for this broadcast. You know, the theme of this particular show today is about our health and how do we avoid disease conditions. And you came on my show already once, talked about the fraudulent parts of the presentation of AIDS as it is presented by governments around the world and the facts that surround it. Could you give us a little bit of a background of that particular issue, and we'll move on to some others?
Well, just briefly, one of the things that I was surprised at when I started looking at it is that there's a standard protocol for isolating viruses and characterizing them. And when I went back and I read the original research, I realized that Dr. Gallo, who was supposedly credited for finding the probable cause of AIDS, had never really isolated the virus. And recent